So I would like to report on the status of the Antares telescope. So the scientific aims which we have are about the same as for those other very large neutrino telescopes. And I will be rather brief on this. It means that we are aiming to see neutrinos coming from galactic sources like pulsars, supernova remnants, or microquasars, or also extragalactic sources like active galactic nuclei or gamma ray bursts. Or it would nice to be to see neutrinos which come from the annihilation of neutralinas coming from the center of the sun or from the galactic center. And further, due to the special environment of the Antares detector in the deep sea, there is interest by oceanography, biology, or seismology. So we are going to deploy a three-dimensional array of photomultipliers in the deep sea. And the key element of the detector will be a so-called story. The story contains three optical modules, an electronics container, and a mechanical holding structure. And the distance between these stories will be 14.5 meters. The stories will be mounted on lines, and the lines will be fit to the sea bottom by an anchor, and it will be held almost straight vertical by a buoy at the top end. The distance between the lines is about 70 meters, and the whole detector is connected to shore via a 40-kilometer electro-optical cable. And then electrical power, flow control data, and the data from the photomultipliers is transferred between the junction box and between these lines by interlink submarine cables. In total, we will have 12 lines. On each line, we will have 25 of these stories and three photomultipliers in each story, so in total 900 photomultiplier tubes. And we are going to deploy this structure in the years 2005 to 2007. Antares will be located in the Mediterranean Sea. You see a map on the north hemisphere of the Earth here. It is close to the French coast, close to Toulon, in a depth of 2,500 meters. This is the Antares site. You see the way of the cable to the shore. And this is in La Seyne-sur-Mer, where we have our control room in this nice Villa Institute Michel Pacha. Antares is located on the northern hemisphere. That means it can look downwards to the neutrinos coming from the southern hemisphere. And this is a map in galactic coordinates. The light color means we have a good view in this direction. And from this map, you see that our view in the sky is about complementary to that of the Amanda telescope located at the South Pole. We have 0.5 pi radian instantaneous common view with Amanda. And due to the rotation of the Earth, we have a 1.5 pi radian common view on average with Amanda, which may be an advantage for us. Two-thirds of the time, we see the galactic center. So the ability to how big the detector is and how good the efficiency is can be given by the sensitivity to diffuse neutrino fluxes. This neutrino flux multiplied by the energy squared of the neutrino is plotted on the vertical
as a function of the neutrino energy on the horizontal,
both in logarithmic scale. You see this black line here, that is the atmospheric neutrino flux, which is a background for us, which has a steep fall off. And you see a number of dotted colored curves here, which are predictions by different models for those neutrinos which come from extraterrestrial sources and those neutrinos in which we are interested. And you see with today's telescope, which is Amanda 2, this is an estimate from TORX, this sensitivity line, and for Antares, we are quite at the edge of the sensitivity which we need to see those extraterrestrial neutrinos. We hope to see some in these detectors, but we all know that we have to go further to go for a cubic kilometer detector, and that will be done in the ice with IceCube, and it will be done in a common European effort also to have such a neutrino detector here. So what is also important for those detectors is angular resolution, because we would like to see point sources. You see the angular resolution of Antares plotted as a function of neutrino energy here. And we first should look to the red line, which gives the angular resolution for the muons. So this angular resolution is quite good. It is below 0.3 degrees for energies above 1 TeV. And you see for the neutrinos it is worse, for the low energies this is due, there is a kinematic deviation between the neutrino direction and the muon direction in principle, but for the very high energies this deviation is negligible. So we are a very good angular resolution, especially in that range which is above 10 TeV, that is interesting for the astrophysical sources. This angular resolution is good, and this is due to the good quality of the water. Water has the water at the Antares site, good transparency, which means we have an absorption length of about 60 meters. We have the distance between lines of 70 meters. And what is also very important, the light effective scattering length is large. That means from the muon, which emits the Cherenkov light, the way to the photomultipliers, the photons do not much scatter. They arrive right in time at the photomultipliers. So the timing information at the photomultipliers is very good for the reconstruction of muon tracks, and this ends at this good angular resolution. You see this from the test measurement here. It just counts as a function of time for a point-like source. And you see this is a logarithmic scale. We have a very steep rise in this timing signal, and that gives this good resolution. You see a view on the line story element here. We have the optical modules. They consist of 17-inch glass spheres, and these spheres house 10-inch photomultiplier tubes from Hamamatsu. Then the signal from the tubes are connected to this electronics container, where we have elements for slow control, for power distribution to the photomultipliers, for data digitization and transfer to shore. And here on top you see an optical beacon, which is needed for timing calibration purposes as a light source for the other stories to see this light. These are five stories prepared for a prototype type line in the lab here, being prepared for an operation which we did last year. You see this prototype line again with these five stories. In addition, we had an instrumentation line which contained components for monitoring purposes like measurement of sound velocity, of sea current velocity, to measure the salinity, temperature, and so on. And these two lines have been connected to the junction box in March 2003, and then we could work with this setup. You see photos from the cable connection here. This is this famous submarine Nautil, which is brought into the water, and then it dived down to the Antares site. And you see a photo of the connection of the interlink cables here. This is the manipulator arm of the submarine. In this right hand, it holds a plug, a connector. And on the next photo, you see how this connector is plugged into the adapter at the junction box. And then the submarine picked up the cable, unrolled the cable, and did the connection to the line. So as those lines are no mechanically stiff and rigid structures, the lines can move in the water, and we do the monitoring of the story position and the story orientation. And I will show you some examples of this campaign last year now. So the positioning is done with acoustic triangulation, and I will show an example on orientation, which is done by measuring the magnetic field, which we know the magnetic field of the Earth. We measure it in the local coordinate system of a story. So we measure it in this system, and we know how the direction is. So from this we know where the orientation of the story is. You see this in this example. These are data from July last year. This is 1 week in July. You see the heading, which is given in degrees, the orientation of such a story. For four of the stories of the line, which are given in different colors. You see that this orientation changed with time, so sometimes the stories moved around, but you see that this is almost a coherent movement for all these lines, which means that the line behaves concerning rotation as a rigid body. So we measure these heading angles with a precision of better than 1 degree. That means we very precisely know how our photomultipliers are located in the water. You see examples of single photomultiplier rates here. These are measured in 10 milliseconds time slices, and you see here it for a time of 10 minutes, the rate. which is an almost constant rate of 40 kilohertz, and we call this base rate or baseline rate. And in addition, you see these spikes or bursts, which come from bioluminescence, which means there are no small deer in the water and they emit light sometimes. Sometimes they are quiet, sometimes not. You now see a long-term variation of this single photomultiplier rate as it has been measured last year in April, May, June. So this is time, and this is this rate. You see sometimes it is 40 kilohertz, as it is expected from the radioactivity of potassium-40 in the water. But sometimes this rate is considerably higher. And also this burst fraction, these peaks, vary with time. Sometimes it's quite nothing, and sometimes it's 30% of the time that we have those bursts. So these are background conditions for the detection of muon tracks. They are a bit worse than expected from before, but we learned to implement these background conditions in our reconstruction strategy, so there's no severe drawback in the reconstruction efficiency. So concerning these operations last year, we can say we have been successful concerning sea operations. The deployment worked fine, the connection between those lines, and also the recovery, which has been done in July and in May. The operations for power distributions, for instance, the junction box is down in the water since 1.5 years now and works fine. Remote control is very functional, and also the data acquisition and data transfer worked. So we had drawbacks. One which was a bit disappointing is that we had a broken fiber. There are 21 optical fibers in the cable. One fiber was broken, and that was that fiber which transports the clock signal. And the clock signal is needed for the timing between the different optical modules, which is necessary on the nanosecond level to do the muon track reconstruction. So that we could not do at that time. This was due to a problem. These cables have been tested by the collaboration, but in the meantime, the manufacturer did change the design. The encapsulation, the tube around the optical fiber was made of plastic, and this plastic could not stand the high pressure. The pressure is 250 bars at that site. So, and that's due to that, one optical fiber was broken. This design has been changed in the meantime, so we are confident that it will work next time. But we have seen muon tracks in another campaign we did in 1999, and you see the muon tracks here. This is the number of muons as a function of the zenith angle, and as it expected, most muons come from top down, and then it drops down with angle. The red points are the measured data, and the blue line is the expected rate from Monte Carlo, so this is very well understood what's going on there. So, then for the next steps, we will redeploy the prototype line end of this year, and also deploy an improved instrumentation line. And then in the next year, starting 2005 and until 2007, we will deploy the full detector. Thank you for your attention.
So there is time for a few questions. Yes.
This is sort of a practical question. I'm sure you've considered it. It's a rather common phenomenon in the seas that material is constantly raining down from above, results of biology and other things. Is it a potential problem that you will get deposition of, over long time on these spheres that will start changing the properties of light detection?
Yeah, it has been measured for sure. Yeah, one has to do so. And from the sediment coming from top, but we are mostly looking down. That is an advantage. So for below 90 degrees, the sedimentation is about 1.5% per year going down in transparency. 1.5% per year, so for a lifetime of 10 years, it's not really a problem.
Well, let's thank our speaker again.